The ongoing evidence of climate change continues to pile up. We recently got the news that 2021 was the sixth hottest year on record. Average temperatures on land and sea were about a degree and a half Fahrenheit above the 20th century averages. Oregon State University researchers recently announced findings of a years-long study of coastal ecosystems right by the ocean. The research shows less resilience in those ecosystems over the time of the study. Let's get some specifics. Two guests here. Sarah Graveham is a postdoctoral researcher at Oregon State University and was here almost exactly a year ago to talk about sunflower sea stars. So welcome back, Sarah.
Thank you.
And Bruce Menke's with us as well from Oregon State University, professor of integrative biology. Bruce, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So, Sarah, the obvious headline is the effects of climate change. Just in general, are you seeing many things happening in ecosystems and their inhabitants that appear to track back to climate change?
Yeah, I mean, we started this study because of some of the, you know, alarming environmental patterns that were happening out there. And we were curious if those, you know, heat waves and things would affect the intertidal zone, which is this ecosystem that we study. And so Bruce actually set up this study about 10 years ago and has repeated it every year since to, you know, to sort of track what climate change might do to this system and also experimentally test if, you know, disturbances weakened the system or if the system responded slowly to disturbances.
So, Bruce, as a professor, you've obviously been studying this a bit longer. I mean, with that longer view, I mean, your own observations in many realms show very different things over time?
Well, yeah. So one of the startling things here is that, you know, I've been looking at this system for, 40-plus years, and it always looks about the same. You know, there are differences among particular locations, but each location has looked pretty stable over a very long period of time. And, you know, disasters like the loss of kelp beds due to the consequences of sea star wasting made us wonder if there were things going on that were not easy to see just by looking at the appearance of the system. So that's why we studied we started these experiments so we could see if there were sort of hidden things going on that weren't so evident to the eye.
So it really is about looking for subtlety.
Yeah. As Sarah said, these systems are regularly disturbed and they always recover and have for, you know, decades. So, we weren't sure what we'd find, but we assumed that what we'd see would be pretty much a similar recovery year after year. To our surprise, that's not what we saw. We saw declining rates of recovery and increased amounts of variability in that recovery, both of which are signs of increasing instability in other ecosystems, and we were surprised to see it in ours.
So, Sarah, back us up to square one here. You mentioned intertidal zone, so let's get mm-hmm. a fix on the kind of area we're talking about here. This is right down by the waterfront?
Right. So this is what most people call the tide pool, but, you know, there's a lot more than the pools that are out at the intertidal zone. And so when you're out there and you're walking around on the rocks at low tide, that's where we work. So the species you're seeing are mussel beds, those big black clam things that cover the rocks in groups, and then sea anemones that look like flowers and sea urchins that are spiky and barnacles and a lot of different species of algae.
So a lot of things to keep track of there, and to the untrained eye, they would look fairly much the same year by year. So it sounds like some fairly painstaking work in keeping track of what was there when you started.
Oh, yeah. So the experiment had two different ways we tested. And so we have plots that we just tracked. So we marked them and then tracked them over time without, you know, messing with them for 9 years at six sites in Oregon. And each site had, like, I don't know, 10 plots, I think. And so that was just tracking what the background ecosystem was doing. And in that case, we saw, you know, the average of the species looked about the same, but they became more variable over time. So that's an indicator of instability. And then right next to each of those plots, we actually picked spots where we pretended we were a heat wave event or a wave event, like a storm, and we pulled everything off the rocks every year for 9 years, and then watched each year how fast that cleared spot rebounded. And that gives us an indication of how resilient that spot is and whether it can recover from, you know, things like climate change events.
Right, you see, you cleared them out on purpose. You messed them up on purpose, right, just to see how fast they'd bounce back.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And so that tells us whether what we found was that over time, you know, the first couple of years, they rebounded really quick. And by the end of the year, they looked just like the plots that we hadn't messed with. But over time, they became more sluggish, and they rebounded slower and slower, and we're calling that diminishing resilience, and that's an indication that the system's slowing down and a little less healthy than it might have been in the past.
We're talking about lack of climate resilience being demonstrated in a study by Oregon State University researchers. You're hearing Sarah Graveham, a postdoctoral researcher, and Bruce Menge, a professor of integrative biology at Oregon State University. And you can join this conversation. Your questions, your comments about what we're talking about here are welcome. 800-838-3760 by phone, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. The deliberate clearing of the site, Bruce, that you guys did over the course of the 9 years. I mean, how closely does that mimic what might happen in nature, that sort of complete removal of stuff?
It mimics fairly severe events, like for example, a severe heating event like we had in the heat dome last summer, for example. If that had occurred at a time when the low zone was exposed, it could have basically fried many or most of the organisms that were there. Luckily, it occurred more in the middle of the day each day, so that we didn't have that particular stress. But in the future, we're going to have more and more of these heat waves, these hot water events. And then, as Sarah mentioned, big storms can rip things off the rocks. And a famous example is that they rip mussels off the rock on a regular basis. We see higher levels of loss of mussels pretty much every year at most sites. But again, the system has been resilient to those sorts of changes and has been able to recover. And so that's why our observations, our experiments, are kind of startling to see this slowing of recovery rates and this increased variability.
And did you do any changes in time of disturbance, Bruce? I mean, did you decide we're not going to disturb this site this year or anything like that?
No, we did it. We wanted to have it be consistent year after year. So we did it every year in June or July, and then we followed the plots through the year until we again re-cleared them the following June or July. If we'd thrown these other sorts of sources of variation in, that would have made it difficult to interpret the results. Mm-hmm. But what you suggest is it would be an interesting addition to the experiments. Instead of modifying the ongoing experiment, we could add other treatments.
That's why I was asking, because I get the sense you're generally not going to get the whole cleaning out effect every year in nature. But that was kind of the point here, wasn't it, to kind of push things along a little faster?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, so nature is pretty good about restoring itself over time, and what you're talking about here then, Sarah, is a way that nature looks like it's having less ability to rebound, to be mm-hmm. resilient.
Yeah. So I like to make an analogy to forests, because a lot of people don't think about, you know, mussels having babies and stuff. And so if you have a forest that, you know, the trees are there, the grasses are there, the shrubs are there, but, you know, say climate change isn't causing stress on those organisms, and the trees aren't growing as fast as they usually do, or they aren't making as many seeds, that's a sign that system is kind of under threat. And what we're in the forest anyway, yet can, you know, prime that system for a more disastrous event like a forest fire. And so what we're doing here is kind of testing for a lot of those what we call sublethal effects. So not just like what's there, but how they're doing. And we're finding that they're not doing as well as they were. And maybe that kind of gets that intertidal ecosystem, makes it more vulnerable to a really extreme event, which obviously wouldn't be a forest fire, but maybe one of those marine heat domes that Bruce was talking about.
Yeah, Bruce, I forgot to ask about the distribution here. It is on three different parts of the Oregon coast, north, south, central, isn't it?
Yeah. It covers about 260 kilometers of coast, which I guess is about 200 miles. So that's, we've been studying these sites for a long time, so we have a pretty lengthy history of observation at all of them.
And did you pick them because they're just easy to get to, or because they represent quality intertidal zone environments, or what?
What we always look for are rocky shores that are sort of broad, gently sloping benches that are exposed to waves. We want to have the ocean environment be as similar as possible, so that is less of a variable to handle. And we also actually try to pick sites that are not necessarily super accessible to the public. So some of these places are rather hard to get to, like Cape Blanco, for example, requires a very lengthy hike over very slippery rocks, and then you have to go through sort of a grotto to get to our site. Some people make it there, but most don't. And that helps to reduce the amount of human. It's mostly trampling that is a problem with human access.
Mm-hmm.
But even that is not so serious along the Oregon coast.
Yeah, you sort of anticipated one of the things I was asking about was whether there was a potential for disturbance by other people, not researchers, and it sounds like not much. And you know, they weren't marked or anything, it sounds like.
No, well, the plots were marked, but mm-hmm. they're hard to see. We know where the marks are, so they're easy to find. But, the Oregon coast, one reason it's so fantastic for this kind of research is that it is relatively unpopulated compared to, say, California and the East Coast. And so the kinds of things that we do, you know, once we've got all the proper permits and so forth, they're easy to do, and we can be pretty sure that what we're seeing is what's happening through nature, not through people.
Sarah Graveman, Bruce Menge, our guests on the Jefferson Exchange from Oregon State University, talking about research that they were among the authors of that has was actually about to be published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, with assistance as well from Angela Johnson, Jonathan Robinson, and Brittany Porson. You can join us on the exchange as we talk about evidence of climate change causing lack of resilience in ecosystems. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Sarah, what do we do with this information now? How does science move ahead? How does the world move ahead and take stock of what you've done here?
Well, I think that this just adds to the momentum that we really, really have to deal with our greenhouse gas emissions. We cannot sit around and let the powers that be inactive about reducing greenhouse gases and slowing climate change and changing our energy grid to a more renewable source. I mean, this is just another set of evidence. But at this point, like, it's a political, politics is slowing it down. And we know enough about the science. We know that that climate change is happening and causing a lot of these declines in our ecosystems. And we're just going to keep seeing this if we don't collectively do something about it.
Bruce, when Sarah was talking about a comparison to a forest a little bit ago, I was thinking about whether there are large gatherings of scientists, even within Oregon State University, where you occasionally get together and compare notes between things like the intertidal zone and, you know, alpine meadow and forest and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, there are national, international meetings where those sorts of people do get together and compare notes, present their results, and discuss them. And at Oregon State, we have a pretty active group of ecologists, and we all interact pretty closely. So, yeah, there's a lot of information exchange pretty much at all levels.
Now, we mentioned that this particular study of these intertidal ecosystems went on for, there were 9 years of data taken, and you finished up with this. This was finished in 2019, is that right?
Well, it's ongoing, actually. Mm-hmm. We have funding for another 5 years of this work, and hopefully another five beyond that. And actually, we have decades, actually, of data on the system in general before we started this experiment. So this is part of a very long-term study, which is relatively rare in ecology, and we're starting to see the fruits of the labor, although, these are not pleasant results to have. We love this system, and it's difficult to see these kinds of changes occurring. It is ongoing, and hopefully we will see what happens. It could actually recover, and that would be fantastic if things would start to improve. But with ongoing climate change, again, as Sarah says, if we don't curb greenhouse emissions, it's going to get worse, even if it does undergo fluctuations.
Bruce, did the trend become clear pretty early in the years of study, and you just wanted to get more years on there to confirm what you were finding?
No, actually, it wasn't. I mean, it looked, when you take the photographs and analyze, or, essentially estimate the abundances of all the things in there, it looked like it was recovering. But when we did these analyses is when we discovered that, in fact, things are changing. We've also seen changes in other species. Mussels, for example, are doing less and less well through their growth, through their ability to reproduce, through the amount of tissue that individual mussels are able to create. So it seems to be a general sort of trend with a lot of the organisms in these systems.
Right. And of course, Sarah, we had that talk a year ago about the sunflower sea stars and all that happened there. So much, much more evidence of things going awry in the water and the nearshore ecosystem, which is where this study focused. Increasing instability of a rocky intertidal meta ecosystem is the paper. If you're going to look for it online at the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Bruce Menge is a OSU professor of integrative biology. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Sarah Graben, good to have you back. OSU postdoctoral researcher.
Thank you.